as although I am in Kyoto when the cuckoo sings, I long to be in Kyoto. I often think of this, you know, that when we're not on retreat, when we don't have a day like this or a time like this in the busyness of our lives with all their expectations and their doing and their demands, we often imagine or idealize, you know, being on retreat and having the chance to breathe out, you know, and simply to take care of ourselves. And then we land up here and we discover it's not quite as easy as it looks, and it's not quite as simple as it sounds. And I think we quickly become attentive. It comes to our attention of how uncooperative and disobedient our attention actually is. And how often there can be this quite considerable gap between our intention and our attention, and where our attention actually goes and actually ends up far from places than where we intend to be. And in a way, this is the challenge of the practice, isn't it? It's that first kind of wake-up call, which can be a little bit uncomfortable and even surprise us, you know. They did a study recently at Harvard University where they invited a random group of people to spend 15 minutes quietly with themselves, not doing anything. Sounds a good thing to get paid for, doesn't it? They were being paid to participate in this research project. And the alternative was to give themselves electric shocks. But that sounds like a no-brainer, doesn't it? You know, that I would surely spend 15 minutes quietly with myself than give myself an electric shock. 85% of the people lasted 7 minutes before they started administering electric shocks to themselves.
No.
Yes, true. I'm not making it up. Which says something about the state of our minds and just how challenging it can be to just be calmly, quietly with ourselves and care for our own well-being. But I don't think it should surprise us. It's really no different than it was 2,500 years ago. There is a timelessness to the human mind, to the human heart. And the Buddha so clearly recognized, you know, that there was always going to be a tension in waking up. There was always going to be a tension, T-E-N-S-I-O-N, attention in aligning our intentions and our attention. And he spoke about this tension repeatedly. And, you know, sometimes we're aware of that tension, and sometimes I think we would almost refer to it as a dissonance that can run through the whole of our lives, isn't it? A kind of discord that can run through the whole of our lives, that we would so love to speak kindly, to speak lovingly to people we care for, and we're snapping. You know, we would so love to be patient and tolerant, and we find ourselves reactive. You know, we would so love to be compassionate in all moments, and yet sometimes find our hearts hardening. And this dissonance, we see it in our practice too. You know, we would so love to sit quietly with ourselves, at peace with our own hearts and minds. And instead we find ourselves in this ongoing argument with how we are and how things should be and where what should be happening. And I think particularly for people in meditation practice, you know, this awareness of dissonance is uncomfortable, and I think it's fine that it's uncomfortable. I think that's part of learning to wake up in our life, is our willingness to embrace discomfort rather than to run from it. But we can easily become quite negative about those areas of dissonance, become quite judgmental, feel a failure, feel to be, disappointing ourselves over and over again. But I think that the Buddha really recognized this dissonance and this tension actually as a creative tension. This is the classroom of our practice. This is really the grist of our practice. This is where we learn about truly transforming our hearts and minds. And that's why the Buddha always recognized, you know, like, this is what is happening, this is what is possible. Where is the possible cultivated? In the midst of what is happening. You know, where is compassion cultivated? In the midst of those moments, our hearts harden. Where is wakefulness cultivated? In the midst of those moments, we feel most disconnected and dissociated. You know, where does kindness begin? In the midst of all of those moments where there is aversion. So there is something about actually recognizing, I think, deeply acknowledging the immediacy of this practice, the immediacy that it's concerned with this present moment, not later, not rehearsing to be a Buddha in you know, 20 years, but how do we liberate the moment that we are in? You know, how do we liberate the moment that we are in, not from what is wrong or bad, but from what is unhelpful? From that which doesn't contribute truly to wakefulness, to aliveness. And we become aware of the power of habit and how it is often the power of habit that really separates intention and attention. How we have the intention for kindness, compassion, how the habit of aversion or the habit of reactivity, you know, separates that and it leads us to give attention to what actually we don't really want to give attention to. And that is the power of habit. It is imprisoning in places where we really don't wish to be or actually don't find helpful. Now, the wonder is, of course, is that mindfulness and habit do not coexist. I think that's a simple equation. Just try to habitually and mindfully tie your shoelaces at the same time. Doesn't work. They don't actually coexist. You know, try to habitually and mindfully speak. That doesn't actually work. So the very, you know, part of one of the dimensions of mindfulness truly is concerned with illuminating the world of the habitual. And learning to see with new eyes, to see with fresh eyes, to see anew. And even though many habits can feel kind of quite benign, you know, like, what does it really matter if I habitually tie up my shoelaces? Well, in the domain of, you know, saving the world, it doesn't matter, you know. It actually doesn't matter. But actually the habit that exists in all of the small moments in our lives are only, of course, little glimpses of the habits that exist in much more powerful and big ways in areas of our lives. And in that sense, you know, from the perspective of mindfulness, everything matters. Everything matters. Every moment matters. You know, how we are in this moment actually matters. And we see that one of the effects of mindfulness is actually, I think of it as waking up the world. I think of it as waking up the world. You know, and a simple example of this, you know, is that if you go out to walk, you know, and you're just lost in ruminations and preoccupations and agitation, you know, you're very aware that you can come back from that walking period and will not have seen anything. You could be anywhere, you know. Nothing will have really touched us, you know. And you can go out in that exactly same walking path. You know, really awake, really present, in a very immediate way, and you're touched. You know, you see the moments that the sun breaks through the clouds, you see the sight of the dew, the rain on the grass. You hear the birds. You hear the airplanes. You know, you're there, and it's almost as if mindfulness is simply having that effect of waking up the world. And of course, it's exactly the same inwardly. That kind of background seeming, you know, hum of mind, body that just seems to churn, have a life of its own, a momentum of its own. You actually really pay attention, you're really mindful there. Your inner world wakes up. You feel the life of your body. You feel every breath anew. You know, you listen to your thoughts. You hear the murmurs of your heart. And it wakens up that world. And that waking up, of course, is always the beginning of understanding. And I'm very aware in our culture about how cliched the word mindfulness has become, and, you know, how one-dimensional it's become, as if, you know, it just means pay attention. Well, people have been shouting at us to pay attention our whole lives, you know. And now we just get shouted at to be mindful, you know, as if that's enough. It's not. Mindfulness is a starting point. It's a starting point. For us to understand anything, we need to be there. For us to see anything, understand anything deeply, we need to be close to it. We need to be intimate with it. And in a sense, mindfulness is that journey of learning to be intimate with all things. Learning to abide not only with calmness, but with sensitivity, with questions, you know, with kindness. Learning that we have the capacity to do that inwardly. Far better than electric shocks, by the way. But appreciating the challenge. So if we start the afternoon with a sitting period, so again, just sensing what it is to, again, bring mind, body, present moment together in a sense of collectiveness. A quality of unification. This moment, just sensing the life of your body, feeling the life of your body. As you touch the ground, sounds come and go. As your breath breathes itself, sensing the entirety of your body, with nothing left out. Being aware of your mind, heart of the moment, whatever mood is present, the shape of your mind, whether bright or dull, whether clear or cloudy, aware of the thoughts that arise, that change, that pass. Sensing what it is just to settle into the body. To feel your body sitting, your body breathing, your body listening. Caring for the moments when your attention gets caught by a thought, an image. Being able to know it simply. Being able to let it be. Being able to return to the body. The body breathing. being mindful of where your attention is resting in this moment, and of the quality of your attention. Cultivating an attentiveness of care, of curiosity, of kindness, present moment recollection. the last few minutes of the sitting, again just renewing that intention to be established within the body, to rest in a calm abiding. Mm.